This is a Fitness Tech Podcast, show number 19 for February 18th, 2011. It is, again, a Friday night, and I am here with Carrie Adams. We couldn't find Jamie. She didn't make it tonight, but Carrie, how are you doing this evening?
I am excellent. How are you?
Good. Hey, what was your week like in the blog? Your blog is just kind of blowing up. What's going on with that?
Yeah. There's some really exciting stuff going on with that. I started blogging for the Spartan Race.
Yeah. Now
which
that
we talked about last
yeah,
week.
Yeah, that's
bit.
A huge deal, right? I mean, there's that blog gets thousands, right? Thousands of hits.
There's about 130,000 plus that follow their Facebook page. And so I got in contact with them, and we'll kind of talk about that in more detail later. But so I started blogging about my cooking and nutrition. And so it's done some really great things for the blog, and some good recipes have come out of there too.
Yeah.
So.
And recipes named after yours truly.
Yes, your protein bars.
I have my own protein bar.
Your protein bars are big time, my friend. Those are big time. Yeah, there's been some good stuff.
Hey, so this week, anyways, congratulations on that. I mean, I know it's been a big week for you, and there's been a lot of stuff going on in your blog, and especially with the Spartan Race stuff, that's just really huge. So congratulations on a tremendous week. Back earlier in the week, I posted on show 18. We talked a little bit about the Arizona Rock and Roll Marathon. Becky and Trista came on the show, and we kind of ran through. They were kind of the Mud Mafia. They're both in the Mud Mafia, right?
Yeah, we had three Mud Mafias run that. We Mad Hatter ran that, and Becky is nicknameless right now.
Okay.
Working on that, and then
gotta get her a name.
Trista ran it too. So we had a really good. Really good showing there, and they all, well, Dan did the half, and Becky and Trista did the full.
Yeah. Great story, you know, in that podcast. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to show.
I have. That's a great, yeah. Well, and actually, Becky is running the Pigman Half Ironman with me in August.
So you got signed up for that?
Yeah, today.
Excellent.
Did that today.
And that's up in North Dakota or South Dakota, or where's that at?
No, Iowa.
Oh, it's in Iowa. It's all the same.
In Eastern Iowa, yeah.
It's all the
literally
same.
My choices for like a hotel. There's one hotel nearby, and your other option is to camp. So that's kind of what we're dealing with. Yeah.
Yeah, it's out there, right?
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be good.
It'll be good. Well, the gals did well. You know, both of them struggled. Well, I should say Trista really struggled through that race. I mean, she had some injuries, and it was interesting. I got some feedback on that podcast, and actually some folks tried to defend the runners. They were like, you know, because it wasn't one of those feel-good podcasts, right, where you get to the end and it's like, well, this
and
is great, and I want to go run a marathon because it hurts, right? Both these gals really struggled through the runs. Trista had some issues with her IT band and had to take a cortisone shot, and it was a real struggle for her. But you know what? They really toughed it out. They got through it. She probably won't run a marathon again just because she physically can't.
She's done.
But you know what? It was great to see her say, hey, I'm going to run. I'm going to start running, and I'll stop when it hurts, and then that'll be the distance that I can run races in. So some real dedication to that, and that was fantastic. So if you're listening to the show tonight and you haven't listened to 18, go back and listen to it. Really good podcast. The gals do a great job of talking through the preparation and what they went through. And you know, training for a marathon, most people won't do it. Most people don't do it. And it's just a different for the average guy. It's, you know, I'm going out tomorrow and running a 17, 16, 17, and that's just a long day when you try and put that stuff in. So speaking of long days, so let's we've got a guest with us tonight. And Carrie, you kind of set this up to make this happen and for us. But Jason, you know, I'm going to ask you to pronounce your last name for me, because I probably slaughtered it like 100 times already in this. Tell me how you pronounce your last name.
For all the non-Croatians in the audience, it's Jack Sedic.
Excellent.
Jack Sedic.
Jesse.
Either that or Yaksatic, if you prefer.
Oh, now don't confuse me with that.
Oh, no. Jim, his mind was blown.
Jack Sedic, right? Am I getting that right?
Yes.
And you're an ultra athlete. And which means you do. I mean, so I talk about
what's the right
yeah.
What's your title?
I've never really considered myself having a title. I say I do ultra distance. you know, but I'm just waiting in, you know. I don't have accreditation yet from the Ultra Academy.
Yeah. Well,
so I've done some 50, 60K, some ultra cycling, Ironman.
Yeah. The extra long stuff. I mean, we, with the folks that I hang out with, the marathon is the ultra distance to them, right? Most people just dream about getting 26.2 in. That's kind of a warm up for you, right? I mean, that's a warm up in your day. You're basically starting with that workout in the morning, right? Is that how that works?
26 becomes just another number.
Yeah. Yeah, you roll past that, you know, and you're like, okay, I'm getting going now. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm pretty envious. I'll admit, years ago, I mean, 3 years ago, I was about 245 pounds, and I could barely run 2 miles. And over the last couple of years, I've dropped a bunch of weight, and I've got back into shape, and you know, I'm happy to complete a marathon. But when we talk about the distances that you do, I think it takes a completely different mindset. So we're going to talk to you about that. Before we do that, let's talk a little bit about where you're at right now and what you're training for. So where are you currently residing right now?
I'm in Pittsfield, Vermont, right outside Killington. I've been living in a barn that's got about 50 miles of trails right off the I guess the back porch. I just kind of leave and I'm off.
Yeah, so you kind of run out the back door, right? Some ski resorts, you ski
out. In snowshoes, no less.
Snowshoe, yeah. The Pittsfield is a really tiny town, I believe. There's probably, I don't know, 40 people here.
Really? How did you find this place? I mean, it's certainly not in a AAA magazine.
Right. Well, actually, the owner of Spartan Race, I work for them. Joe DeSena has a home here, and he owns the farm that the barn's located at. And when I started, consulting for Spartan Race and working with them, you know, I found out about this death race that they put on and various other ultra events that happen, I guess, on the campus here. I like to think of this as kind of a endurance camp. We kind of have a bunker barracks type system that ultra athletes from around the country can kind of come and crash whenever they want.
Yeah, and how many people are there with you right now?
Two. We're getting some visitors in this weekend, and then next week there's a race. It'll be full of people.
You know,
it's kind of communal in a way.
So
I'll be there, Jim. I'll be there.
And we're hoping to do a little bit of live podcasting while you're there, right, Carrie?
Oh yeah, We'll get lots of footage. We're going to do an entire weekend of documenting Jason's 100-mile snowshoe race, which we'll talk about in more detail.
Yeah.
I did just say 100-mile snowshoe race. That's legit. That's happening.
Yeah.
And Jason's doing it.
You know, I mentioned that to some of the guys today. We were, you know, I was talking about doing this podcast tonight, and I mentioned this 100-mile snowshoe, and they said, snowshoes? And I said, they're like, you mean those long things that you put on your feet and you go through, snowshoes. And so you're preparing for a long snowshoe race. But before we talk about that, tell me a little bit about your connection to Spartan Race. So that's SpartanRace.com, and what's your connection to that organization?
My connection with that organization is I was flying home from Swaziland, and I found a passport in the airport, and it belonged to this guy. So I Googled him, and it was the owner of Spartan Race. And so it turned out he did Badwater. He had done every kind of crazy ultra run in the world, adventure eco racing. And so I was like, this is the kind of guy I want to talk to. So I looked him up, and we became friends. At the time, I was a musician and was looking for a little change in direction. And I started working for them. I do marketing, online marketing, kind of consulting and that.
Well, can I just say how we met? Because it's kind of a cool, random story, just to kind of connect all the dots here. So we talked about this the last show, too. I'm trying to get the Spartan Race to the state of Nebraska. So I was out on Facebook doing some recon on their page, and there was a link. Jason has a blog and talks about his training and a variety of things. And I clicked on it, and I read it. And it was compelling for a couple of reasons. First of all, obviously the things that he does as an athlete are incredibly impressive. He's done lots of distance racing, Ironman, went to Kona. I mean, all kinds of really amazing things. But the way that he writes about it is really phenomenal. He's a really good writer. So I just felt compelled to send him an email. I said, hey, this is great. You know, I run half marathons in 10Ks and doing these triathlons this year, which is new for me. So I kind of, you know, on a different level, understand that headspace of trying different things. And he wrote back and we just kind of started talking and about racing, about training, about food, which led to what I'm doing now, doing the nutritional blogging for them. So, yeah, it's kind of weird how those things work out.
And that's come on very fast. Jason, your blog that Carrie's talking about, Jason Jaksetic, right? Jaksetic. So all one word, Jason, Jaksetic, .blogspot.com. I've gotten kind of hooked on your blog, I'll be honest with you, going out there and reading on that. I told you the other day, you kind of kicked me in the teeth when we were talking about the measurement piece, because as you start doing a lot of athletic events, you start measuring more and more, and sometimes it can become about the measurement instead of about the experience. But you mentioned you're a musician, so you haven't always been kind of a ultra guy?
No, I was kind of the antithesis, you know, up until about, I ran my first race around 21 or 22, and I'm 28 now.
Okay, so not that long ago.
Yeah, it's been about seven years, I guess.
And what kind of inspired the change for you? I mean, what was the moment you knew you wanted to start doing some of this stuff? Did it happen all at once, or was it kind of a long process?
I was hanging out somewhere at a friend's house, and someone's brother had an Ironman certificate hanging on the wall, and I read the distances, and I kind of looked over and I was like, hey, you know, how many days did you have to do that, you know? And I was intrigued and compelled at that point, so I signed up for a 5K and did that for fun. I did a quick off-road triathlon. I didn't know anything, you know. It was mountain biking, canoeing, and running. Yeah. I faked the whole thing. And, you know, what happened was, I don't know, after I did my first 5K, I did it in 22, 23 or something like that. I was hanging out in Boston and I was drinking at a bar, and my friends came in and they're like, oh, we're not drinking tonight because we're running the Boston Marathon tomorrow. And I was like, oh, that's pretty rad. You know, that's pretty great. I was like, I ran 4 miles once, you know, and then I got to ask, and I was like, so you qualified for Boston. That's pretty great, you know, that you're that competitive. And they're like, oh no, we're running it Bandit. And in Boston, for those of you who don't know, you can just kind of, because it's so kind of exclusive and closed, they'll let you run the whole marathon as long as you don't get in the way. They won't pull you from the course.
Right.
So I was kind of like, I'm not doing anything tomorrow, you know? So we put on this white.
I'm not doing anything white, tomorrow. I like that.
Put on a white tank. So I put on a white, like, cotton t-shirt, tank top, and we wrote the address where I was staying on it, you know, and said, if found, please return to. And I was actually staying at that Iron Man's house, and he gave me $10 for cab fare because he was concerned about this whole prospect.
Yeah.
And that just fueled me. And so the next day I ran the Boston Marathon, having never run more than four miles.
That's crazy. And how did that, I mean, how did that race go for you? I mean, you know, not minute by minute, but I mean, what's left as an overall impression for you after running that? What do you remember?
Well, I remember, you know, I mean, it was just pure idiocy. I came flying out of the gate, you know. I probably ran a half in like 1:45. You know, I was flying. I was breathing heavy at mile two. I had no idea about pacing. I went at a 5K pace. And it was probably, you know, will remain one of the most excruciatingly painful days of my life.
And was most of the pain suffered between like 20 and 26?
It started right at 13. Oh, did it? 13, okay. I blew up, and but I hobbled along, and I finished. So,
and what was your finishing time? You remember?
Yeah, it was 4:20.
Yeah, and that's still pretty respectable.
Yeah, it is.
I'm saying. since my best is a 419, to run out of the gate at a 420 is still pretty good. And so from that point, were you kind of hooked? I mean,
I was, yeah, I was absolutely
excited. You're gonna make, I'm gonna make a run at this, and I'm gonna do some of these things more often. Is that kind of how it came together?
Yeah, yeah. I realized I had a newfound respect for the whole enterprise. You know, I went in, with a vague notion of what it takes to do this seriously. And, I got back to that moment of when I said, I jumped right into Ironman. You know, I didn't really go the marathon route. You know, I wanted to do triathlon. I wanted to get that Ironman in one day, so to speak, you know. I wanted to step up and do that. So I went right into triathlon training, really.
Yeah. And so how long between the marathon and your first try, and did you go right for a sprint, or right for a full triathlon, or did you go into a sprint, or kind of what was your progression to get you there? You remember?
Within about 18 months, I was doing my first Ironman.
Okay.
It was Lake Placid, yeah. I did one marathon as a warm up. I did some sprints and halves, but right away I knew Ironman was my objective.
Wow. And you finished your first Ironman, and what was your time?
First Ironman was 11:40-ish. I broke 12 hours.
That's excellent. And what was that? I mean, what's that experience like? What was it like for you to, you get out of the water? I 2 miles of a swim for me, that's my day, right? I mean, that's like a 6-hour swim. I'm just saying. But I mean, so when you get out of the water, you got to get on the bike. I mean, how did that day go for you that first time?
You know, it was a great experience. You know, the first time you do it, you know, first off, I was in Lake Placid, which, you know, is one of the most popular events. So there's 3 volunteers for each athlete. There's hundreds of people in the transition area just going crazy. It's kind of overwhelming. It's a day where everyone can be kind of a star. Like, most people don't even catch the pros leaving the water. They're too busy waiting for their friends. And, I grew up in that vacationing in Lake Placid, so it was pretty meaningful. It was probably, and that first time, that first Ironman, I wasn't worried about time. You know, I was just doing it. And I think I've been trying to recapture that first time ever since.
That's kind of sweet, that first time, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you do that, this summer we climbed Mount Evans. There's a Mount Evans ascent in Colorado. Starts at 10,000, goes up to 14,000. It's a 14-mile run. And that was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. And you get to the top and you can't breathe. I mean, there's no oxygen. You're struggling. You've been on the road all day. And I remember I got to the top and I got real emotional. And I'm not a very emotional guy to start with, but I kind of just broke down and cried at the end. When you got to the finish line on your first Ironman, what was that experience like for you?
I would put it in that category. You know, there was that moment of like, wow, you know, you've taken this really long journey, and you know, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's a completely overwhelming sensation.
It's incredible. And it's that feeling, at least for me, it was what keeps me in the sport. It's what keeps, because it's, and I know I'm not going to hit that every time, but it's just one of those moments. It's a deep emotional, it was almost like a religious experience on the mountaintop there, literally at 14,500 feet. And you think, wow, this is incredible, you know? So you say you're trying to get back to that. Is there a race in your future that has the potential to be kind of that, I'm not sure I'm going to get to the end of this kind of race, that's out there for you right now?
This whole season, you know, I keep talking about, you know, the joke is I'm just in way over my head. You know, I've done some ultra events, but I've never done 5 ultra events in such a close proximity. Essentially in 8 weeks, I'm doing 4 ultra distance events, no little to no time to recover. So as we mentioned, I'm doing 100-mile snowshoe, but my biggest fears this season is doing 100-mile ultra run with really steep gradients 2 weeks before Ironman Texas. So I think that's got me kind of, you know, that's going to be stepping out my comfort zone, you know, stepping outside. There's a lot of faith kind of than just, you know, I don't know if I'll make it. And then after that, I have another ultra run and then the death race 2 weeks after that.
Yes, let's visit the death race, shall we?
Yeah, talk.
That's a compelling. A
little bit about.
Name.
Yeah, tell. I mean, so literally, right? I mean, you can die in this thing, or how does that
work? You know, you sign up for like your turkey trot, and there's three pages of waivers. You know, I could twist an ankle, I could have a stroke. You know, but the death race has a three-word waiver. It just says I may die, and then you have a little box to check, and like that takes care of any litigation. All the ultra events I'm doing this year are part of with Peak Races. That's peakraces.com. It's a great race series in Vermont. It's where I'm living. And one of the peak races is the death race. The death race is the kind of pinnacle final installment of Spartan races. It's where the two meet. So you have Spartan races, which is an obstacle race. That I can't do them because I actually work for Spartan Race, so I have to work the events. But I did get permission to go out and do this 48-hour death race, which is also a peak event. And essentially, it's got about a 10% completion rate. It's a very elite finishing crowd. Joe Decker, the world's fittest man. Guinness Book of World Records. It took him 31 hours to finish it last year or the year before, and the last 19 people to finish was like 42 hours. This year, they're capping it at 48 hours. They modify it every year. There's not a standardization.
Yeah, so I read a little bit on that, and right, they kind of guard what it's going to be, and it's kind of secretive right up until it, and you might even know during the race what you're going to do. There's different things, and some of the challenges seem impossible to even complete. So how do you prepare for something like that? I mean, if you don't know what you're getting yourself into, how do you get ready for a race like that?
You know, there is no, and I'm not privy to any information. That is, you have to take a blood oath to get in behind the scenes to the death race. You know, I know the geography here, and I know that it's not accommodating to anything pleasant. You know, I went out with Joe, one of the founders of the death race, and we decided we were going to go training, and that involved lugging a canoe, like a full three-person canoe with his son in it to the top of the mountain through 2 feet of snow. You know, that was his idea of a fun Monday. It took us about, you know, an hour and a half of full anaerobic work to get it to the top. And, you know, I was puking. I'm like falling over, and he's just kind of laughing. He's letting me do a lot of the work, and you know, and it's all about the, you know, it's not sport specific training. There's not one event that I can go chop wood all day, and it's just as good as training for the death race. I was pulling a canoe up a mountain. It's more of a mental game than a physical game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for you, so, right? I mean, it's not so much about riding your bike for 4 hours today and riding it for 6 hours on Wednesday. And, you know, you need to be in the best physical shape and maybe more important, the best mental shape going into this. I mean, the mental piece plays a big part in this, right?
It does. You know, so I finish a big workout now instead of coming home and putting on compression socks, I go and chop ice for an hour or two. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you had posted, oh, I don't know, a week or two ago, you know, you'd made that reference back to the Rocky IV, which, you know, growing up, that was an 80s, big 80s movie for me. I grew up in that era. I, you know, the U.S. versus the Russians, and Rocky's out there training in snow and doing sit-ups off the loft in the barn. And so those are the kind of the images I have for you right now, living in this barn in snowy Vermont. Am I pretty close to what you're actually doing? I mean, you're chopping wood, you're dragging things, you're hauling stuff, right? I mean, is that what you're doing to get ready?
You know, it started out as a joke, but, you know, the more I describe it, the more people are like, hey, that's Rocky IV, you know? And
Yeah.
You know, and I just have to say yes, I guess so.
Yeah.
You know, I even grew the beard. So.
Well, let's transition a little bit to nutrition because we got Carrie here. Yeah. And
so, talk about your nutrition.
So, Jason, you must burn just a gajillion calories throughout the day, right? I mean, so how are you keeping yourself, with enough fuel, one, to get through this? And then, Carrie, as he talks about this, I want you to either chuckle or right? So, Jason, walk through what a kind of a day for you from an eating standpoint kind of looks like. And while you're doing that, I'm going to bring Jamie's here. So while you're talking through that, I'm going to bring Jamie in. So she might pop in the background here. So, Jason, yeah, a typical day of eating for you.
Well, you know, I hate to do that. You know, it's embarrassing in front of Carrie. I think you know how that is.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
you know, I have a confession, and she knows I hate to cook. I'm terrible at it, so I eat a lot of cans of, you know, my favorite things are just pineapple and V8 in mass quantities. I wake up and have about 4 cups of coffee and then proceed to eat as many eggs as I can handle. I guess that's a little rocky. Typically, in a day, I eat about 6,000 calories, and unfortunately, I do it mostly in 3 sittings. So that whole kind of grazing throughout the day isn't really working.
Well, is grazing practical for you? I mean, realistically, as you're out there working out, should you be jamming things in your pockets to be eating at all times?
Can I answer that question?
Yeah, go ahead, Carrie.
Because the answer to that question is yes. That's exactly what should be happening. It should be like a constant stream of, you know, taking in nutrition so that you're maintaining a lot of things, you know, but it's hard. I realize, like, he's in a different category. So some of the things that I talk to people about, for certain times, a carb is a carb. Your body needs it. The quality of those carbohydrates, though, is pretty distinctive. So I know Jason told me one time that he eats pizza at a full sprint at times and Twinkies. And while that totally, you know, when you need the calories, you need them when you're doing those kinds of races. But we're going to try to plan out something that's a little bit more nutrient dense so that his body will get a great deal of benefit from that as he's training. So,
Carrie, as Jason not being a cook, right? I mean, a self-proclaimed, I hate preparing food. Are there things that he could do differently than he's doing now that would not necessarily require a huge amount of preparation from that standpoint?
Well, you know, the thing with eating clean or with just eating healthy is that it does take more time in the kitchen. It just does. There's not a lot of ways to get around that. And some of what he's doing is actually what I would recommend, eating out of cans. And his nutrition, really, I give him a hard time, but it's really not that bad compared to what I hear. Even from athletes. So in that sense, I think he's doing pretty well. There was the time that we talked and he was eating peanut butter out of a jar with a cookie as a spoon.
And that, by the way, dude, that one, my hero. Hero. that is, I could not, a nice dark chocolate chip cookie that you're just into the chunky peanut butter. There's nothing better, that, right?
Yeah, well, it's peanut butter. Yeah. I'm a big, you know, peanut butter is a great fuel source. It's cheap. There's a lot of benefits to it. And that conversation actually inspired a new recipe. So hopefully we can take in the peanut butter in a little bit more nutritious capacity. But yeah, I'm going to actually be there for the snowshoe race. So I'll be doing the cooking and the nutrition for that. So
we're going to get some video of that, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, there'll be a lot of video there. There's going to be a lot coming out of that.
I think that'd be good to see. Jason, from an eating standpoint, I mean, what are your big staples? I mean, what are you kind of consuming the most of it? And I know peanut butter is a big staple for you.
Peanut butter is definitely a big staple. I adore peanut butter. I'm eating, you know, my fruits and vegetables. I love pineapple, and I eat a lot of vegetable soup, mixed vegetable soup, a lot of eggs. I've given up on any kind of, like, I think the trick to eating the way I do and staying healthy is abandoning any notion of flavor. If you just, like, get rid of the whole idea that food should taste good, you know, like it's okay. Like,
see,
you know?
I hear things like that and it breaks my heart. It just makes me sad. And there's so many people that I hear say that, and I'm so glad that I'm here now to change that for you.
So the other night I was sitting there and I needed, you know, I don't like to go grocery shopping. I try to fill my pantry, but last night I cooked up ramen noodles and then didn't put in the seasoning packet. Those two things of ramen noodles. And then I just dumped a half a container of salsa on my ramen noodles. And like, I thought that was inventive, and then, you know, I ate it. It didn't taste good, but you know, I ate it.
Oh,
I had a couple
hard
boiled eggs with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I mean, it does sound like, I mean, so this is going to be great. You're going to taste food again. Yeah. When Carrie's out there preparing some stuff for you. I had, last weekend we ran, what did we do? 15 last weekend. And
you did 15. I did 12.
You brought your homemade, protein bars, which there was some debate on, whether you could actually, that it would actually taste good. And, you know, and it was delicious. And so, you've got, Jason, you've got a treat, coming. Hey, real quick, I want to bring Jamie in here. Jamie finally joined us, from wherever she was at. Jamie, how are you doing?
Great. How are you, Joe?
I am well. We have Jason. Meet Jason. I think you can see him.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
Skype. Jason.
Great.
Jamie is one of our trainers at Gallup, and she spends a lot of time kicking my butt out on the street. We run together quite a bit, and she's a nutritionist, and she does training for. We're very fortunate at Gallup to have two full-time trainers on staff. So we can go down to the fitness center anytime we want and get advice, and they put training plans together. Basically, Jamie says, Jim, run far and run fast. That's all she says to me.
Like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, then don't let the smile fool you. She's tough as nails. So it's like, you'll be like, do I need to do more? And you're thinking she's going to say like five more. And she'll say like, yeah, like 25 more, please. And you're like, you're killing me.
Then you're done.
So Jamie, welcome to the conversation. So we were just talking about nutrition, and Jamie, I know you talk to us a lot about nutrition. Jason, where you're at, is there a big opportunity for fast food in there, or are you too far away from McDonald's?
I haven't seen a McDonald's in forever.
Okay.
You know, I haven't seen, it's all straight up. There's a little general store that has three shelves of, you know, pantry stuff. And I live on a farm though, so there's plenty of eggs. And I got to wait till spring, and then I'll get vegetables.
Now, how long are you staying there for?
I 2011 is about being a little primitive. So I set 2011 aside to hang out here.
You're going to stay there the whole year?
I finish racing in towards September, you know, maybe before it, you know, when Vermont gets really Vermont-y, I'll split, you know, but.
Jamie, Jason said that he eats a lot of eggs. How many eggs is too many eggs in a day?
More than three.
So, Jason, how many eggs are you eating a day?
Well, no more than five.
But to be fair, though, Jamie, he's also burning through like 6,000 to 8,000 calories a day.
Yeah.
So he's not in the same, you know. I mean, there's I'm pretty militant about food, and I'm even, you know, quite accommodating for some things, because I think there's got to be a realization that, you know, calories in certain circumstances are just necessary. So,
oh yeah. Keep it under a dozen.
keep it under a dozen. I like that.
I got on the scale today. I've lost about 9 to 10 pounds since I came up here 3 weeks ago.
And, wow.
I think it has to do with there's no fast, quick fixes for food, and so cold, I'm burning a lot more calories. I think, is that true? Do you burn more calories when you're freezing your butt off all the time? Okay. And so, you know, I think I've been, if anything, sparing on the calories. I think when you go mostly natural foods and very bland, you save a lot in terms of your calorie consumption.
Yeah. Now, what's your ideal weight, Jason? I mean, are you at that? Are you below it? Do you keep track of it? Is that something you measure, or are you just not worried about that?
You know, it depends. You know, previously as an Ironman, I felt great around 155, 160. I was still really powerful, but light enough to do the hills, you know, on the bike. I was always a climber. But with when it comes to ultra distance, these guys are burly. They're big dudes. I'm worried that I might be a little small, particularly for the death race. Because, you know, if you're, for example, pulling a canoe to the top of a mountain, you know, over snow mounds, they're not going to change the weight of the canoe because you're 150 pounds, you know. Mm-hmm. So the guy that's 220 and 6'4 is going to have a little bit of an advantage on me there.
Yeah.
So.
Although on some of those, he's got to drag all that mass around, too.
He has to drag the mass around, too. So I think it evens out.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you've got this snowshoe race coming up here. Just that's in 2 weeks, March 5th, right?
Yeah.
And that's it's 100 miles, and that's up and down hills, all snow, all snowshoe. Is that right?
Yes.
And how long have you been training for that?
I learned how to snowshoe. I looked it up today, January 30th.
Wow.
Of this year.
So how are you feeling? How are you feeling about that right now? Going into that, I mean,
you know, this is a race where I wake up at night and I panic. You know, it's something way over my head. I haven't, you know, it's a whole different mindset. You know, I did a little bit of, you know, research as I was out there, did some timed myself, and you're averaging 3 miles an hour at best on snowshoes. Particularly because this whole race is on the side of a mountain. So, you know, best case scenario, I'm looking at, you know, 33 to 36 hours to finish the race if I don't sleep. If I grab a couple hours sleep.
Do people sleep on that? I mean, to catch a little nap or?
Yeah, it's a tough call. Like, if you want to win, probably not. But if you're out there having fun.
What's your goal? Like, are you looking to win this? Like, what's your best case scenario?
If I get in under 48 hours, I'll be pumped. I'll be really excited. This is not my ball game. This is not anything I'm familiar with. So, you know, I'm doing this because every voice of reason inside my head said I couldn't do it. And for me, that's a call to action. It's not, you know, I was out there snowshoeing. I was signed up for the marathon. I was like, hey, I'll do a snowshoe marathon. And I went snowshoeing for the first time, and I came back, and I was like, I'll just do 100 miles.
Yeah, just because I can.
Well, I remember, Jim, when I did a 100-mile snowshoe race. And I can't. Although I was talked into, a 6 mile? What am I doing?
You're doing the fun run. Yeah.
The fun run. And can fun be an operative word?
which is how far? Again, how far is what you're
six
doing?
And a half.
Six.
Six and a half, yeah.
So what, when Jason, when you're out, you know, when you're out snowshoeing across a day and a half, at the 24-hour mark, what are you thinking? I mean, what's going through your head at that point? I've never done any kind of athletic event that long. I know for me at mile 20 on a marathon, I'm hating myself. I'm like, why am I doing this? I want to die. You know, I'm this was the dumbest thing ever. What's going through your mind at that point?
Well, you know, you nailed it perfect. The exact same thoughts you're having at 20, except, you know, you'd start doing these calculations and you're like, okay, I can't go 7 more steps. I can't go 3 more steps. I want to die right now. And you start doing some math. At the current pace, if I were to maintain this, I'll be done in 13 and a half hours, or I'll be done in 20 hours. And, you know, you're thinking about the next 10 seconds, you know, and that's when it becomes a mind game. You know, you start counting trees. I used to count telephone poles during ultra events. You know, every telephone pole, like, put my whole heart and soul in to get into the next one. So it's a bottomless pit of despair that I found when I raced 24 hours. you think this is stupid. Why am I, you know, every reason that you gave yourself to do it disappears, and you're just left with a disturbing sense of absurdity and the fact that you just made the biggest mistake of your life.
Yeah. And yet you keep going back. and it's an people ask me that all the time, and they're like, so why do you do it again? So Jason, why do you keep doing it? I mean, what's the, and I'm not saying this from a person. I mean, I've done a couple marathons myself, and each one I've hated myself at mile 20, and I've told myself I'm not going to do this again, and yet I keep coming back. What drives you back to it?
It's you know, and I'm not going to say it's the finish, you know, because with these events, you know, you finish, there's no big epiphany. There's like for this snowshoe, there'll be a couple hundred people doing the fun run and the marathon. They'll be long gone when I finish, if I finish. There'll be like one guy standing there by the clock to like, you know, give a high five and carry. They'll be like, all right, you know, and it's
about time.
It's the most anticlimactic finish in the world. Endurance racing. You know,
right.
I don't know if you read some of these books about these guys and their thrilling 100-mile runs, and you watch the YouTube video, and you think you're at a high school like track meet. You know, there's just nothing. There's no glory in it. So why do you do it? It's just a personal, and I think it touches on a spiritual journey. You know, it touches on why do you do anything.
Yeah.
Like, why are you going to work today? Why are you bothering to get out of bed today? It all kind of levels out.
Yeah. Don't you kind of think it takes you to the end and back? I mean, it takes you to the very end of yourself, so to speak. And you get to the point where you think you can't do anymore, and yet you do. Right? I mean, it kind of touches that human spirit.
I tapped into that the first time. You know, when I came back from Kona, and like I said, it was this kind of, you spend 2 years of your life for a goal, and then you accomplish it, and you're kind of left with this what now feeling. And, you know, I signed up for an ultra race, you know, a 60-kilometer run through Central Park. It was like 3 weeks after Kona. I was way underweight. And I just ran it with absolute, like, absurd abandon. And my goal was, you know, let's just take it to the limit. We'll see when I blow up or I die, you know, whatever comes first. And I ran through a couple levels of threshold I had never hit before. And before I knew it, I was done. And that kind of changed things that day. You know, I went through a couple more levels where I thought I was finished and just kept running. And so you kind of recalibrate each time.
So if I was thinking about becoming an athlete like you, I'm an okay athlete, but I'm thinking about taking the next step. What kind of advice would you give to me, or to a guy or a gal who's just kind of starting on this journey? You've learned a lot about yourself as you've walked this path. Any advice you would give to somebody, knowing what you know now?
First off, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. You know, make sure it's something you really want, not something you feel like you're supposed to do. You know, I think that's the biggest lesson I've learned in my career is having an intrinsic sense of why you're doing it, not an external impetus. And then second, you know, be ready for failure and mistakes, and it might, you know, be ready to blow up and DNF. You know, I had my first DNF this year in an Ironman. It was, you know, I woke up in an ambulance. There wasn't much I could do, you know?
Yeah.
And
was that your first, was that your first one that kind of your, over the last 6 or 7 years, is that the first time you ever didn't finish a race?
There was, before that, there was a 540-mile bike ride through the Adirondack Mountains. And at mile 493, I blacked out.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Jim, our running stories are never like that.
No.
Our stories never end with, and then I blacked out and woke up in an ambulance. Our stories end with protein bars and
high fives. Woohoo! We did it 6 miles. High fives. Great run. Yeah, I mean it's a different thing, but Jason, you know,
it's not all pretty. It's gonna be ugly, and you're gonna get injured, and if you're not at peace with failing miserably, you know, if you're not at peace with what you're doing, if you're out there to show somebody something other than yourself, you're going to come up empty, because when you're out there, it's just going to be you and you don't care about anyone else, you know, except the people that are in your crew supporting you. And, you know, that's my biggest piece of advice is get your head on straight before you start worrying about your body. I made every mistake I made was because my intentions weren't disingenuous. You know, yeah. I was worried about winning or times or some kind of nebulous glory that is just not there. It's yeah. like if you really want to start racing, forget about racing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've kind of blogged about that over the last couple of weeks, at least the ones that I've been reading. And to me, that's very intriguing because you're doing it. Now, I've said this about when I started blogging a couple of years back, I told myself I would blog if nobody read it, right? I mean, that the blog was for me. It was therapeutic to sit down and write something out, post it to the – now, I posted it to the internet, right, so everybody could see it. But I always thought if no one read it, it would just be for me. And to me, that sounds like that's a very similar, if no one is at the finish line to congratulate you, if no one, you know, if pass or fail, it's about the event. You're doing it not for the glory necessarily, but for what it does to you inside. Is that right?
At this point, that is what I'm consumed with.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm constantly asking myself. You know, first off, you know, some people don't care.
Yeah.
You know, you go, like, everyone's got their own thing and their own life. I'm not looking to change the world. You know, I'm looking to change myself.
Right.
And if people can dig that, I think that's great. And I hope that they'll do it in their way, too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
In endurance sports, we have this celebrity culture. In endurance sports, you know, I finished, you know, when I was in Kona, I was drinking a beer and I had, you know, Ferris Al-Satana on my right side, former world champion, Norman Stadler, you know, current world champion on my left, and then Chris McCormick, two-time world, you know, now this is before that. You know, he just came
right.
up and, you know, you just finish a beer. It's not this kind of, you know, baseball, basketball, football type spiel. And nothing against that. That's great. But we do this for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's great. Ladies, I've been kind of dominating the questions. So, and I know we're going a little bit long here. And I don't want to keep Jason too long because I know he needs to get his beauty rest tonight before another day of training tomorrow. But Jamie, you just jumped in here. Any questions for Jason before we let him go?
Yeah. Jason, what do you do to physically train yourself for these types of events, especially like the snow trekking? What do you do to physically train your body? Like, do you do certain type of workout?
Yeah. You know, for what I do, it's mostly aerobic conditioning, you know, but you can't train for a 100-mile snowshoe by practicing going 100 miles. So I'll do... You know, my longest snowshoe will probably be 20 before that, but I do it with a really heavy backpack. What I've been doing is I've been moving a pile of wood to the top of the mountain. It's about 2 miles straight up, and I fill my backpack with firewood, about 35 to 45 pounds worth, and, you know, just kind of just slowly trudge up. And so it's a mixture of strength training and aerobic capacity, so that when I go out there without a 40-pound backpack, I feel like I'm light on my feet, you know. That's pretty much the game plan right now. A lot of ultra runners do the same type of thing with training, dragging a tire behind them. Or just, you know, you cannot simulate a 100-mile run because you're going to beta oxidize your muscles. You're going to eat yourself. You know, you finish much lighter from a run like that, and you can't train that way.
Right.
So,
Carrie,
I would say.
Oh, go ahead, Jason.
No, I would just say you throw out your training books, you know, forget everything you've ever read or learned. And I think fitness professionals are so important for people that need to have weight management issues and people who are just getting into fitness. I think that it's so important. But if you want to start doing something like transcendental, you know, you're moving something into a different realm, and you got to throw out those books that tell you you can't do something. You know, if I followed my manuals and my triathlete's Bible, you know, A, I wouldn't be injured so much, but B, I would never accomplish half the stuff I've done. So
yeah,
right.
You gotta kind of go beyond it. Carrie, you're gonna get an opportunity. So this is a week from now or 2 weeks from now that you're gonna be out there?
It's 2 weeks. Well, little less than that.
Yeah, a little less than 2 weeks.
I'll go out a little before the race so that we can kind of get the nutrition part down and figured out. And hopefully I can cook for some of the other guys too that are doing this 100 miles. Nice. But
and
you know,
Jason, I've had Carrie's cooking. It's really good. So you're in for a treat for sure.
I told her I'm eating clean till mile 50. I promised her I'd go that far.
Good. Excellent.
And then after that, if I want a Slim Jim stuffed in a Hostess cupcake, she better comply.
And I will have. I did agree to that.
That's
but
awesome.
I think we'll have a good game plan going in, and you know, I have certain things that I think will work out well, and so you know, we'll. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm there to crew for him, so it's got to be something he's comfortable with. He's the one that's going to be out there doing it, so you know, my job is to just facilitate that. So we'll have a plan, and if we have to amend it. Because, I mean, I don't know. When we first started talking about it, I sent him some stuff, and I just said, I'll just total disclaimer, I know nothing about what 100 miles snowshoes going to look like nutritionally. I don't think anybody really can for the first time out. So we'll figure it out, and I'll have backup plans, and you know, it'll work out. It'll be good.
Yeah. Well, it'll be fun to follow you. And Jason, I really appreciate you taking some time. You know, I know you're really busy in the evenings there on a Friday night in Vermont. But no, I do. I'm just kidding. But I do appreciate you. Listen, I appreciate you got a busy training schedule, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. If you would, we'd love to have you back on kind of after you get through this race and maybe talk about the experience a little bit, and Carrie can kind of give some firsthand, you know, kind of knowledge of what's going on there. Would you be willing to do that for us?
I'd love to. I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
That'd be great. And some real insight into what kind of goes on, you know, behind the scenes for what you do. Not everybody can do this, and I'd encourage, you know, folks to really do some deep soul searching before they start something like this. But Jason,
you know, I think that the lesson though, Jim, is that everybody has something, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, Jason's in a different level from an athletic standpoint than we are, but everybody's got something that they can commit to that they don't think that they can.
That
and I think
may
the
be
lesson in the story,
right?
the
real quick
that.
before I go, yeah. I mean, I admire what I do, for me, it's more comfortable to run a 50 miler than to try to break 15 minutes on a 5K. Like, I think that's the most awful sensation in the world, is running that fast. You know, I'd rather my one mile time is like 5:45, but I can run 10 miles in an hour. It's just everyone has got their thing to go after.
Right.
And it's just as hard. It's just as difficult. And for some people, you know, finishing a 10K is probably more a bigger deal than me doing 100 miles. And I really believe that. I had the pleasure of knowing Johnny Blaze. I don't know. He was the guy that had Lou Gehrig's disease in Daytona in 2005.
Yeah. Did he roll across the finish?
Yeah. The Blaze Man roll.
Yeah. Yeah. Very moving story.
Yeah. I met him at a race, and it was funny. I had his name written on my hand because I had watched him the whole year before, and you know, he's there. And that moved me forever.
Yeah.
Like something like that is a real story. What I'm doing isn't a story. And the other disclaimer is there's a lot of people out there that do these things fast, like a lot faster than I'll come close to this year. Go read about Scott Jurek. You know, I'm the average guy trying to do these races. I'm not an elite out there.
Yeah.
I think that's my story, is that I'm stepping up to the plate kind of as an underdog's underdog, but people out there do these things, you know, and they're so far off everyone's radar.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a great story, you know, and I think, you know, you're right. For a lot of people, a 10K is seems impossible. And Jamie, you and I got the opportunity last fall to run with a gal who ran her first 5K.
Yes.
Right? And it was just you and me, and we finished it in 30 minutes, a little over 30. But the incredible satisfaction that I had on finishing with someone who had run their very first 5K and thought it was impossible just the day before was amazing. Wasn't that?
Oh, she was so excited too. She's like, thank you so much for running with me. I never could have done it without you. Yeah. You know, this is my first time ever. And it was a huge milestone for her.
Yeah. Jason.
Well, I think too, like for those types of stories and hearing those things, I think it's just, you need to step up to your own life and you need to challenge yourself in ways that, whether it's even in an athletic capacity, I think the lesson there is that you need to push your limits and try to experience things and see what you're capable of. And that's, I mean, truly the thing that moved me about the blog that made me want to write to him in the first place, that started all of this, had nothing to do with what he'd accomplished. It was the way that he wrote about it. Yeah. That's really what moved me. And so I think one, you definitely need to go check out his blog and read it. It's really, it's something that allows you to see inside of something that in and of itself is amazing, but to hear him write about it is really very, very cool. So definitely check that out and stay tuned with all the things that will come from this. Cause I do think that there'll be some great stories that will come out of this one.
Yeah. And I guess, so if you're listening to the show, whether you're listening live right now or the recorded version, that'll come out later. I mean, maybe think about that thing that you've always thought has been impossible. And it, you know, we run and we talk about running on the show a lot, but not everybody's a runner. Maybe it's on a bike, or maybe it's walking a certain distance or whatever, fill in the blank. Maybe it's climbing a mountain. Maybe it's whatever that you think has been impossible in your life. Or maybe it's quit smoking. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a habit you need to get rid of. But I think there's a great story here. And Jason, we look forward to following you on this journey. I think what you're about to go through is great and fantastic. And more interested as we do that to hear kind of your heart on this and on how you process this internally as you go through it. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us tonight and to get this out. And we look forward to catching up with you here shortly.
Thank you, Jim.
You bet. Great having you on tonight. Let me remind the folks a few things. One is, if you want to contact the show, if you have questions for Jason, you can send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and I'll route those to you. Let's encourage folks to Jason to follow your blog. And again, I will put those show notes in the show notes. I will put Jason's link so you can get out there and follow that. Easily enough. We have started a Facebook page for the Average Guy Network that, instead of me posting individually out on Facebook, I just created a site that you can join and part of a group, much like the Mud Mafia group, Carrie, that we started out there. And so I will post out there. And if you want to follow the updates of what's going on here or the show updates, you can go out and join that group on Facebook. Let's see, what else? Gals, have I missed anything this evening? This has been a tremendous evening.
We have a long run tomorrow.
We do, don't we? So if you're listening live, 3:00 out at Weirspan, and there's a group of us gathering together. That's a 6-mile loop, and so you could do 6, 12, or 18, or I think it's just short of 6, actually.
Protein bars will be there.
You're gonna bring some calories.
I am.
Okay, that's exciting.
You're not allowed to have any till like mile 12, because 6 miles is not necessitated.
I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed.
So you don't need nutrition after 6.
I'm gonna have Captain Crunch for breakfast. Is that okay?
Oh, you know, actually, my very first mud run I ever did, before I went out, all I had in the house, I had Captain Crunch and a Rockstar, and I got second place. So you know what?
Yeah. No, actually, I'm serious here. Before Lincoln last year, that was my training. The morning, the breakfast of the race, Captain Crunch was part of the.
You're kidding.
No, it's one of those mental things that I just thought sugar and energy and I don't know. It wasn't that bad.
How far was it?
The full Lincoln full.
Shut your mouth.
No, I did.
You know, I want to say too, I'm doing your nutrition right now leading up to the full. And so you both, Jason and Jim, are going to be able to testify to the bet. And what did you say to me, Jim, before we got started about your training week and your food?
So Sunday was the day of gluttony for me. I basically ate everything in sight. I started with two bowls of Captain Crunch for breakfast. It was like sourdough bread, butter, and peanut butter, and just garbage for lunch. And then I pretty much ate pretty much from lunch till like midnight. So
your run on Monday?
It was Monday's run. I wanted to puke the whole run. It was the most awful. Well, it got worse because in the evening we went out for Valentine's Day, and I had one of those Cold Stone chocolate shakes. That's about 7,000 calories just all by itself. And then we got to the theater, and I had to buy the $14 popcorn and gallon of soda that comes with it.
I was just eating everything. I had heart palpitations.
So Monday's run, I was running maybe 10, 30 paces, and I just wanted to throw a full run.
It's not you, Jim.
It's not me at all. I was just throwing up. So as I ate better throughout the week, and Carrie, this is what I was telling you, I got back on the bandwagon, and I ate clean or cleaner. Maybe I need the cleaner diet. Not the clean diet, but the cleaner diet. And as I ate better, my runs got better all week, and evidence in the time. And I don't spend a lot of time necessarily tracking my times when I run, but I could run much faster by Thursday. And it really, Carrie, it does have to do with nutrition, for sure.
Yes, 80% of it is nutrition.
Well, my slogan is this: running is 90% nutrition, and the other 10% is nutrition.
Just saying.
It makes a huge difference. So,
ladies,
thanks. Thanks for you guys taking your time out here on Sunday night. We'll wrap this up. I appreciate you guys coming on, and Jason, we'll have you back in another time. So, everyone, have a good night. Carrie, can you say something for me? All right, that's
good. Hello, Governor.
that is good.
That's a good mic check for you.
That's recorded now, by the way. So.
That's got to make it in there.
No, that'll make it.
That's got to make it in there. Every day, Jason, we would
at work.
When I worked at Gallup, I would walk down the stairs, and I'd have to walk by Jim's office to go get water. And I don't even remember why it started, but one morning I was just like, "Hello, Governor."
So I have to respond with, "Hello, Governess." Jason, any questions on anything to this point? It's really relaxed and just fun.
Yeah, no, great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, yeah, no, it'll be great. You'll be better for us than we are for you. I'll just be honest with you.
So true.
Just saying.
You're gonna give us some street cred. We're gonna ruin yours.
Yeah, like, it's over. I just want you to know, any career that you ever thought you had, it's over. After this podcast, it's just over. Oh, it'll be fine. Ready, Carrie?
I am ready.
All right, here we go. Let me one more check just to make sure everything's recording right. Okay, we're good. I've also done a show where we went the whole time and it wasn't recording, and that kind of blows.
That needs to make it in the blueprint.
It might.
I've done it. You know,
and you're like, "Oh, we've got to do that whole thing over again." And the guests look at you like, "I'm going to murder you."
We can't recreate these moments, Jim. This is lightning in a bottle. This is magic. Jazz hands kind of stuff.
All right, here we go.